A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it?
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the movies of 1999 from the eye of a hurricane here in 2018.
Nice. I like that one.
Yeah. As I told you off air, Mike, this is an obvious one.
In terms of that portion of your introduction.
Correct, because we're doing the movie Forces of Nature.
Yes.
Which is about like one or two classic. Forces of nature. It's not about
one
as many.
One or two forces of nature?
I literally thought this movie, because I'd never seen it before. By the way, I'm Kenyon Ibart.
Yeah, I'm Phil Lisko.
And today we have a guest, Clark Wolf, a producer and host at Fandom, the senior.
senior
producer and host. Yeah. And Clark chose the movie Forces of Nature, which I thought was literally about like a flood, then a tornado, then
flood
a plague of frogs.
Flood of emotions.
Yeah.
Get it? It's subtle.
Then I learned that the two forces of nature were Ben Affleck and Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, but there was a lot of weather in this movie. You're kind of downplaying the weather.
Also, they were to call Ben Affleck a force of nature, this movie is like one of the
worst
biggest
things,
jokes
yeah.
I've ever
He's
told on
not
the air.
A force of nature in this movie, really.
But before we get into this movie, let's meet our guest.
Indeed.
Clark, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen.
Tell me, please, why did you choose this movie?
Well, actually, I threw out a couple of options.
She did.
I was very passionate about The Sixth Sense, which I was told I could not have because it was being saved.
Well, we were saving
for,
it not
for M. Night.
Yeah, sure.
But. Twist.
We were saving it more. We were saving it really more than anything
we're
for Deeper in the Run.
Sure.
Well, that's okay.
Well,
we're not
going to
say, but. Because it's such a popular film, we're trying to space out some of the like really big ones. So it really wasn't a better guest will cover Sixth Sense.
I'll also say this, and I hope no future guests are listening to this.
Uh-huh.
Doubtful.
When you put a list together as a potential guest, we're going to pick the dumbest one.
Yeah. Like, because I gave Phil so...
Because we're like, wait, they want to come on for that? Great.
I want to scroll through my, like, texts and see what some of my other options were. Because there really were. And now I did pick Sandra Bullock because I love Sandra Bullock. She is...
More than Julie Roberts, it seems.
More than Julie Roberts, definitely. It's not even it seems. It's like, for real.
Yeah.
So...
Ocean's 8 greater than Ocean's 11.
I mean...
Hard to say that.
I would agree.
But yeah, so I picked Forces of Nature because I remembered loving this movie when I was younger.
Sure.
But also I love Sandra Bullock and I like Ben Affleck. Like I am on Team Ben Affleck.
I like Ben Affleck.
We will be talking about both of these people who I truly love. I also want to point out Julie Roberts and Sandra Bullock in-universe sisters-in-law.
In
the Ocean's movie, they're in universe.
Yes.
Sisters-in-law.
Yes.
How do you like that?
Yeah, they're sharing a franchise now.
It's kind of amazing that Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock have not been together in something before.
Yeah, it's sort of like I'm waiting for the De Niro Pacino Beach thing, but with Julia Roberts.
But with like lady centric activities. Yeah. So, but also
watch the shit out of that.
Ocean's Nine.
I am also from the South, and I love Savannah, Georgia, where the wedding is slated to take place. In fact, for a very long time, I wanted to get married.
Where are you from?
I'm from Atlanta.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So I wanted to get. I almost said I wanted to get married in Sandra Bullock. That's what kind of day it's been. But yeah, so that there are several reasons that I tried to pick this. But so my list included, I want to just go over some of these because
it's fair.
As a lady who does love Sandra Bullock, I have other interests that that might be less expected. So I nominated The Mummy, which I really was like my second place or third place because Sixth Sense was like South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we got into some you had already done, like Deep Blue Sea and Wild Wild West and such.
I love that Wild Wild West was on your list.
She had a great list.
It's a very eclectic list.
It is an eclectic
list.
That's the list of a person who wants to have fun on a podcast.
Yes.
And we saddled you with this piece of crap.
And I was like, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the one with the weather.
Well, it was – I mean, here's what it ultimately comes down to, which is that when I reach out to people and say, will you come on – they send me lists, and usually it's anywhere from 5 to 10 movies, and a lot of the usual suspects, as you would imagine, the bigger movies or the movies that just like everybody loves, which is fair. But then when you get into like the weirder picks, those are the ones that's like, I'm going to have you on for Forces of Nature because I want to hear you talk about Forces of Nature.
And
listen, Sixth Sense is, when we do it, we'll reach out.
I'm going to fight my way back onto that podcast on that episode. Yeah. But the other part of it is I'm mostly known in a lot of ways for genre, for horror specifically. Yeah. Like I love horror and it's kind of I've studied it in college and as a host and a personality, I talk a lot about genre and I'm a fan of genre. And so that's something that people sort of associate with me. So I think part of the reason why,
I was like, I want to hear talking about
exactly. It was like that was another part of it. So.
I was going to make the joke that you.
This is a horror movie.
You did pick a horror. You did pick a. Zing. You did pick. I'm not even going to finish the joke. Christ. What I am going to do is say, did you meet Phil through your genre covering journalism?
Indeed.
Stuff?
Yes, indeed.
Because the question is, how did you meet Phil?
Yes.
And you can elaborate. Apparently, this is an interesting story, Phil.
I mean, it's more interesting than I knew him from, working in an agency or from working on Sleepy Hollow.
That's how I know you.
Yeah, super less interesting.
Okay.
Clark, you can explain how you see.
So it is through Sleepy Hollow.
It is through Sleepy Hollow.
But I was working for Nerdist for a little while, and I was on a show visiting a set called Matador. Matador was on the El Rey Network.
Yeah, the Robert Rodriguez.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was produced by KO Paper Products. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to Jay Williams, worked at KO, and he's a great guy, and he said something like, we're doing Sleepy Hollow. And I was like, oh my God, what? And so I just completely side tangent. And I was like, I love horror. I love Sleepy Hollow. Season one was so great. That British guy, he is awesome. Tell me everything.
That British guy.
And so as a result, a couple months later, Jay actually reached out and was like, listen, we're thinking for season two about doing an official podcast after show for Sleepy Hollow. And you clearly are a fan of the show. So would you like to produce and host that? And I was like, yeah. So that's how Phil and I met.
That's how it all happened.
That's a really good story.
Isn't that crazy?
It's a good story.
Yeah, I like that.
She did all the 18 episodes.
Yeah, all of them. And we recapped season one because we were starting with season two.
Right.
So
we
got on the phone with Alex and
Bob and some of those
people. Yeah, and like the whole team. And it was very cool. And
it was really cool.
Yeah.
It was very well produced.
Thank you.
Unauthorized Station 19 podcast.
Why would we do that? And why would I be involved in that?
I want to do an unauthorized podcast.
I'm sure you do.
Oh my God.
Maybe
we're not
doing
that.
Why not?
Why would we do that? Why would I partake in an unauthorized thing on a show I work on?
Oh, no. We should do one about Step Up.
Oh, yeah. No, we can do that.
You would do that with me?
I would do that with you.
What a guy. All right.
Anyway.
But I love the idea of doing it unauthorized.
We were authorized for that.
We were authorized. Yeah, fully authorized.
Too much oversight. Let's talk about this
movie. Let's talk about this movie.
All right.
Buckle up, guys.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a bumpy one.
Stop. I'm going to...
Tagline for the movie.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't it? What is the tagline?
Probably is.
All right.
Hold on. I'm looking at the tagline.
The tagline is like, wind, sleet, snails.
Puppy dog, too.
What the hell are you even talking about?
This movie... All right. So I'm going to like start a conversation about this movie.
You should, but I'm gonna tell you what the tagline is for this movie.
Tell me.
He went from the eye of the storm into the arms of a hurricane.
All the weather puns.
So let's get this out. This is a romantic comedy without romance.
I mean, it depends on how you define romance.
Go ahead. Tell me where the romance is.
Well, okay. We're gonna have to have a discussion about intent then. Because this movie intends to be romantic. Whether or not it's successful at that is debatable. And that's kind of the crux of my issue with
really
this movie.
Well, that's a really interesting idea. Because, okay, I'm going to do the thing that I do every single podcast. I'm just going to talk about the end. And
spoilers.
And here's what I think – where I think this movie went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So just jumping – the basic plot of this movie is...
Hold on. Let me give the synopsis if you're going to do it like this. It's like we haven't done this before or something, Kenny.
We haven't. Go ahead.
Synopsis. All Ben Holmes, played by Ben Affleck, wants to do is make it from New York to Savannah, Georgia in time for his wedding. When a seagull and a hurricane ruin any chance he has of flying there, Holmes reluctantly joins the quirky Sarah Lewis, played by Sandra Bullock, in a rental car for a road trip back to his waiting bride-to-be, Bridget, played by Maura Tierney. But nature seems to conspire against his every attempt at a timely return, and in the meantime, he finds himself growing closer to Sarah. I mean, it's essentially Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, except it's attempting to be a romantic comedy in the process.
Yeah, I described it to you.
Yes, as Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but they fuck.
Well, yeah.
But they don't.
No, yeah. That's not – I described it to you like that before I watched it.
No, I know.
I wasn't saying that you assumed that they had sex. What if it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but they fuck?
Yeah, like that's the pitch in the room. Yeah, for sure.
By the way, not a bad log
line. Not a bad log line. And how this movie gets made, because conceivably – or conceptually anyway, there's nothing hooky about the concept of this movie, really. It's just like a guy and a girl. It happened one night, or that sort of thing, right? Where a man and a woman have to go on a journey together. And again, I don't have a problem with this film, because I don't mind that idea of just two people with chemistry that decide to go on a adventure together or are forced on an adventure together. I think it's inherently charming. Now, unfortunately, these two people don't have the best chemistry in the world, so you're not really feeling the sparks.
I like them better after they get the first kiss out of the way. I was thinking about
it's like 50 minutes in.
I know. No, I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's like, and we know because we have hindsight, we've seen Ben Affleck turn into the Ben Affleck he is now. We've seen Sandra Bullock turn into the Sandra Bullock she is now. Like, I feel like we know what they're capable of, but that whole first hour is such a 90s rom-com. But then that whole second half, I actually quite enjoy. I like them getting to know each other, like really kind of figuring out what they mean to each other and if there is going to be a future. And I actually don't mind. Like, I feel like it's the right choice. Everything that happens, like, I agree with after the fact. In terms of how it like turns out.
All right. I just wanted to talk about the ending and get this out because I think it's fundamentally important to the understanding of this movie and why I think it went so wrong. In the end of this movie, basically this movie, you follow Sandra Bullock and Ben Holmes from New York to Savannah through several hurricanes or whatever they're doing. And it does have this typical romantic comedy setup. But the entire –
Can I just say one quick thing before you spoil the entire film? 11 minutes into this podcast.
I'm not spoiling it. No one's...
I just want to say that, like, sure. If you can speak of it from 30,000 feet, that's all I'm saying, rather than, like, just...
This is the 30,000 feet view, because it's fundamentally important to this.
No, I understand.
So they're going down from New York to Savannah.
Yep.
In this car. And
it starts as a train, then there's a car, right, so car train.
I have to give away the ending big deal. And the ending of this movie is he doesn't wind up with Sandra Bullock. He winds back up with his bride-to-be, Maura Tierney. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the movie. Here's the problem with the movie. Because of that decision that they decided to pull this twist ending, which, by the way, like kind of on one level, more power to him. Like I was totally, totally surprised by it. And like I think that's kind of cool in its own way.
Yeah.
But the result of that was that everything that felt weird about the Affleck-Bullock relationship was by design, but not emotionally driven by these characters. And what I'm trying to say is this script was never able to go full throttle with Affleck and Bullock because you would have hated them at the end when he didn't choose her. Right? It had to feel like at the end that they weren't right for each other to make the Maura Tierney end land. All right? But they didn't do the work with Maura Tierney and Ben Affleck. Right? So the whole movie didn't feel like these two people had to get together and Bullock was an obstacle. So neither of these romances, the Bullock-Affleck one –
I understand what you're saying.
You know, there's a movie There are other movies like this. Like I weirdly, like the Indecent Proposal comes to mind.
Okay.
Where you spend the whole movie it's not a riot, but this movie's not a riot either. But you spend the whole movie basically with Demi Moore and Robert Redford. But the reason like I think that movie kind of works better is because they spent the first 30 minutes building up this Demi Moore Woody Harrelson relationship, and you really do want them to get back together at the end. They're together for a scene. So that's basically why I think this movie is so flawed it can't commit to either one of these relationships and they're both hurt by it.
Here's the fast thing that I'll say. It's very quick.
No, please.
It's just that what I think we're running into is this is Ben Holmes' movie, but Sandra Bullock is our movie star. So it's confusing, right? Like meaning like we can't tell the audience you need to really love Maura Tierney because Sandra Bullock is our star. She's top build, right? But the problem is that structurally, this is Ben's arc. And so I think that's ultimately at the heart of what you're getting at is we want to see Ben's story, but Ben's not Sandra Bullock. And I think Mark Lawrence, the writer who worked with Sandra Bullock a lot
after this movie.
Exactly. I think this was like, I think she clearly found something in him that she really liked as a writer.
Absolutely.
And I think he, after this experience, probably was like, I get this now. I know how to write this better now. And I think that's why you get into, like, for instance, 2 Weeks' Notice, which comes so much later. It's not the same story, but, like, I think that you've got that, love mm-hmm. triangle bullshit, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. So, like,
I think that there's also something – I don't disagree with you, Kenny. I think that everything you're saying is totally fair. I think all the things that you're saying don't work about the film are what make the film interesting to me. I think that the director – clearly read a script that was a relatively by the books rom-com, except for the ending, which obviously sort of turns this on its head a little bit, and thought, okay, I can do something interesting with this. She hires a DP who shoots this film like it's out of sight, out of sight.
Sure, it's
who
cool.
It's a cool looking movie, but it's also antithetical to the script. Like Maura Tierney is antithetical to the character she's playing. Like that is weird casting, and I love Maura Tierney.
Why do you think that's weird casting?
Because I don't think that she radiates that sort of, super cute girl that's waiting for her husband. Like that relationship, when they speak cutesy to each other, it doesn't work.
No,
for either of them. Like, so again, there's casting issues. There's a disconnect between the script and basically everyone else involved in the film. The script and Sandra Bullock sort of make sense, kind of. But then ultimately you've got a film that is sort of at odds with itself because a director that wants to make a quote-unquote better or more interesting or more complex movie, but the script doesn't bear fruit on that. So you're just sort of left with a weird movie.
So in the end, having watched the movie, I understand – that was the intent. I understand that someone saw a script, a romantic comedy script for two movie stars that didn't end the way most romantic comedies end.
Yeah.
But there's a reason most romantic comedies end the way they end, right?
Sure.
And if you want to deviate from that structure,
yeah,
awesome.
Yep.
But fucking sell it. You have to sell this Moira Tierney, Ben Affleck, you're my lobster
fully,
shit.
Fully agree
throughout
with you.
The movie. And what they do.
And I stand by the fact that had it been cast differently, like the movie that I kept thinking about when I was watching this a little bit was My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah, My Best Friend's
Wedding. Which also
has
an unconventional ending.
Totally.
Which has a relationship that you buy into Dermot Mulroney and Cameron Diaz. Like, they're adorable together and you understand why they're drawn to each other. I mean,
but you like Julia Roberts.
But you like Julia Roberts and you're okay with her not getting the guy at the end.
She's the movie star.
Right. And you're just, you know, it's going to work out for her.
She's also the villain of the movie.
No, and I recognize that.
Like, no, and I'm not.
And I would say that Sandra Bullock is in her own way kind of the villain of this film. I think she is. I think she's definitely – she's the biggest obstacle of this movie.
She's –
forget all the actual like forces of nature that are – in terms of the, you know,
no, the reason, weather. The reason Julia Roberts was the villain is because of what you just said. Because Dermot Mulroney and Cameron Diaz are perfect for each other because Cameron Diaz is so fucking good in that movie. She gets up. She sings karaoke poorly and you have fallen in love with her and you don't want her to get hurt. And at that moment, the karaoke moment, when Julia Roberts starts going after this sweet, like really nice, really perfect for him girl, mm-hmm. you're like, what are you doing? Right? But in this movie, we don't know Moira Tierney really, and we're not rooting for her. We are and on top of that, this movie over and over again is hitting you over the head with the idea of relationships are stupid, marriage is stupid. Anybody who's in it, you're going to get cheated on. You're going to – and first of all, it's all men who are saying that. It's fucking insane. But you're going to get cheated on. You're going to be miserable. You fuck around. You should sleep around. So it's hitting you in with this idea that marriage is stupid. And he buys into it. He actually cheats on his wife because he does kiss on his
Well, that's so does she. But I mean, here's what I'll say as
I
well.
I know because
but
they're trying to sell the.
No, I know. Yeah, I understand.
It's
a frustrating movie. I'm disagreeing with you, but I'm also thinking that your frustrations are coming not from the script level. I think that fundamentally, Moira Tierney's character Bridget isn't written that terribly. She's not written well, but she's written as good as the prototype or the whatever character in another romantic comedy would be. Again, it comes down to the casting and it comes down to the way that it's shot. The movie is shot very darkly. The tone of it is super dark and weird. So the scene that's coming to mind is the scene at the beginning where she's in that motel room or hotel room with Ben Affleck. And it's shot like some weird, like noirish movie.
With the bizarre lighting outside.
And the camcorder. So like there's nothing cute about these two. So it's cute on the page though. The dialogue they're saying is charming and fine and totally winning. But if it's executed through that type of lens, you don't buy into it and you're not rooting for these two people. So what you're left with is a situation which I fully agree with, which is you're not rooting for them. So if you're not rooting for them, there's no stakes. And if there's no stakes.
It's an interesting point. I agree with you that the direction did this movie no favors. The scene you reference is a very good example of that. You are meant to feel
– it's weird.
It's either you are meant to feel discombobulated
sure.
by the two of them together or the director didn't know what she was doing. And
or she was trying to just make a different movie. Like I'm not sure that there's I think there's intent here, as I said before. Like and you look at her filmography, she's done a ton of TV. She's done a bunch of really interesting things. Like I don't think she's an incompetent director by any stretch of the imagination. I just think she was shooting a different script. I just – you know what I mean? And for good or for bad, we're left with a film that feels like it's neither here nor there.
So I was – this is something that I looked up because I also wonder if Sandra Bullock was looking to do something a little different because this in her trajectory was mm-hmm. after Speed, after While You Were Sleeping, after Practical Magic, after Hope Floats. And so I wonder if this was a situation where she was like, I get to play not the villain as much as like Julia Roberts was the villain because that's a – I think that's
in
a good analogy.
Right.
In My
yeah.
Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah.
But I get to play a little bit of a darker character in a safe movie. And I bet that Sandra Bullock and Bronwyn Hughes like talked about,
yep.
yeah, we're going to use the nature, and but we're not going to have it be like, you know, prissy nature. We're going to have it be dark nature and dangerous nature. And I'm sure that was a choice that Sandra Bullock movie star and director came together 100%. And said, we're going to do this.
She was duped then. Because she was duped and by whoever or whomever because Sandra Bullock plays a quote-unquote dark character, but everything that's dark about her is exposition. right?
Correct.
Yeah, we don't see
anything. You don't get to actually do
anything.
I agree.
So you have this character who's essentially a cipher. And it's really disappointing from that – it's really disappointing from, honestly, the viewpoint of a Sandra Bullock fan that – I think she was just kind of the direction was almost go out okay. and act crazy.
But I would also say that the next film she does after this, I mean, the next real film that she releases after this is 28 Days, mm-hmm. which is the film. I mean, she has Gunshy, but I don't know what that is.
Yeah, 28 Days is the AA.
28 Days was the AA movie. Yeah. This feels a little bit like Training Wheels to that. This feels like she wants to start going in darker, quote unquote, grittier areas, aka Oscar Beatty things. And I think that she, to your point, might have got sold a bill of goods a little bit. But I do think that she executes this quite well considering what's happening in this movie.
I also think that – and I mean I don't know because you know I wasn't there. But I think that this might have been some of the best option out there at the time. Meaning like we have to take into consideration that in 1997, 98, 99, America's Sweetheart – you know, what did it look like when America's Sweetheart went bad? It meant they took their clothes off. It meant they did striptease. It meant they did – you know what I'm
right,
saying? And so like
sure.
if you're Sandra Bullock and you're looking for something just a little bit different, honestly, I don't know if that script is out there for a Sandra Bullock to get into that darker territory in 1998.
It's an interesting idea. It's an interesting point. I don't really disagree.
I will say if you're a Sandra Bullock fan, to your point, and you sit down and you watch this movie, it's going to be disappointing. And it's going to be disappointing because her character is really kind of left-twisting in the wind, especially like once the kid reveal comes in. And we'll walk through the plot of this in a second and give a little bit more context. But once the kid reveal kicks in, then I was just like, ugh, okay, so where is this going? And it doesn't go anywhere particularly satisfying.
I also wonder if this script, when it was like, if they maybe added stuff later.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because it does feel so much like Ben Holmes' movie that I wonder if when Sandra Bullock decides, I want to make a movie like this, if they go back and they go, okay, well, let's add some cool nuance for her. And it comes out to this jumbled mess.
I think that's
like
totally plausible. And if I had to bet, I'd bet that's what happened.
I would too.
They did it in the laziest way. Obviously, it's the laziest thing to just say, okay, you were married before, you're an addict, you have a kid who you love. Like, that's just to me, that feels like the movie star, and I'm not blaming this on her, but that feels like someone trying to give the movie star a meaty role. When all I think this movie is a total mess. And I do, because I don't even know what purpose she serves for Ben. Again, this is Ben's movie, you know? And you're totally right. This is from his perspective.
She serves the same purpose as any manic pixie dream girl does in a lot of these movies.
She's not even a good manic pixie dream girl.
I'm not saying she is. I'm telling you that that's sort of the role that she fulfills, which is that she's supposed to get him to question his, you know, his marriage and question his love and make him realize that he's happy and that he does want to spend the rest of his life with this woman. And again, is she effective at doing that? Not necessarily. I'm not sitting here defending the movie.
No, I know you're not.
I'm really just saying that the fact that we can have this conversation about the movie speaks, I think, to the fact that it's got more going for it than – so for instance, last night I texted Kenny and said, hey, did you like this more or less than Runaway Bride? And Kenny's response was – and I can pull it up, but basically it was
– I don't want to be misquoted on the pod.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Basically, the long and short of it is that you felt that Runaway Bride has less to say – but that it was more sort of – it was lighter and had more fun.
All right. So you said just finished Force of Nature. Did you like it more or less than Runaway Bride? My first response was legit excellent question. And then I said I think I'd
– We do a podcast.
And then I think I'd sooner rewatch Runaway Bride. It's a more confident movie. It knows what it's doing. It has Julia Roberts. It's also deeply stupid, but Force of Nature is less aggressively stupid by a long shot, but I think it's deeply cynical. I think it spoon feeds everything and it has a fundamental flaw that I would go into in the pod. I've already done that. I think Forces of Nature is a better movie. I think it's –
that's kind of my point.
I think it's a better movie, but I actually like
– I won't watch either of them again.
Runaway Bride can kind of wash over my head without me getting angry. Well, like this movie kind of makes me angry.
And keep in mind this is Runaway Bride has Richard Gere and Julia Roberts teaming up again going for it.
Expectations, too.
Well, expectations,
have
yes.
Have you seen
but,
it recently?
What I was going to say is their chemistry, they've already worked together before. They've already – so that is – that is whether or not you know
it's familiar.
Exactly, like basically saying Ben Affleck and Sandra Bullock have not had that luxury. I'm again not saying that it's not a fair criticism either way because it is, but I do think that in order like.
It's actually, to your point, so much of the reason why I'd watch Runaway Bride
that's
again
what I'm getting at,
is because it is familiar and it doesn't – it doesn't – I mean, look, we did the pod and we made so much fun of that movie and it's like a really, really, a really stupid, horrible movie. Yeah. But this movie, the reason I think I'm kind of a little more angry about it is because it's missed opportunities.
Agreed.
Missed opportunities. Well, there are good ideas here. There are bold strokes here and just so much of it was whiffed.
I'm not disagreeing, but I would also say
you seem to have a different. I respect the executed.
I respect that somebody went out and tried to make something more substantive with this movie. They failed.
Yeah,
but it's a noble failure. But that's what I'm trying to make.
That stuff, like I said, it's a better movie than Runaway Bride, but it is the kind of thing that makes me angry because I see these like Thomas Crown kind of made me angry because I see these small things that you could have done to make it. I don't know if this movie could have been really good, but it could have been pretty good.
I think if this movie was made today, a version of this movie was made today with a different tone, a different, not even necessarily with the same actors, but like with different cultural things going around, I think that it would be darker. And I think – because I think – like I have seen so many in the last handful of – I just came from a screening of The Spy Who Dumped Me, which, you know, is what it is. It's a very silly movie and it's not a rom-com. But it is a hard R girl comedy. Mm-hmm. The same way Girls Trip was a hard R girl comedy. And I think but with some dark shit in it. Meaning like dark humor in all of these hard R girl comedies I've seen, The Heat, over the last handful of years. So my point is I think that if this movie, a version of this movie were made today, you could have an R-rated movie that does lean more into the darkness and still maybe could be not a light romance, but like more of a romantic movie, but have a little bit more of that darkness.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I haven't seen The Spy Who Dumped Me, and we are having Susanna Fogel on in a couple weeks,
cool.
So she's coming on.
She directs the shit out of that movie, man.
Yeah,
she gives some great action sequences.
But that being said, I think that this film really does sort of fall in a weird space of someone that's striving to do something interesting is failing at doing that because it's just too glaringly not like antithetical to what the script is trying to make. And I think that Sandra Bullock isn't done any favors. Her character isn't done any favors. I would also say too that, you know, on the whole Ben Affleck of it all, and we should talk about him, but he hasn't really figured out his stardom yet or his star qualities yet.
No.
So what he's struggling with in this movie
Nor is Hollywood.
Sure. That's true too. Yeah. Well, because he's taken every fucking movie that's offered to him at this point in his career. But I do think that he can't go toe-to-toe with Sandra Bullock. Like he's just not there yet. So you're feeling this discrepancy to your point of star power as well where the movie's not her movie. It's his movie, and he can't really keep up with her. So there's this imbalance that's tricky. He feels very green in this movie. Like, this definitely feels like a guy who's just not ready for prime time yet.
Well, Clark, what you said, like, if you made this today, not necessarily with the same cast, if you made this today, you could easily cast these two right now, right?
Yeah.
These two people star romantic comedies in 2018.
Sure.
Or they could. Ben Affleck could hold his own on screen against Sandra Bullock these days. And, I mean, not to get too objective. I mean, objectifying, but, like, Ben Affleck's a lot fucking hotter today than he was then. Like,
yeah, he did not look good in this movie.
But he
looks like a weird child.
He does. And he has this weird –
But I think but I do wonder, is it somewhat intentional? Meaning, like, are they trying to communicate – like, you said green, and I think that's the right word. Ben Affleck is a weird – kid from Boston, like meaning Ben Affleck, the man, I don't think can escape who he is. But
ever?
Ben, right, exactly. But like,
I want to talk about him.
So I wonder if like,
I love
the
him.
Clean, I love him too.
I love him too.
But I'm saying, what I think we're seeing is that like, he is out of place because this character is not who he can relate to at this point or even pretend to play, and they dress him, meaning like they costume in, it's like they're costuming another actor. they're costuming and their hair and makeup and everything, like the way he looks is another man.
Well, there's just also something about Ben Affleck at this point in his career where I feel like he, you know, there's imposter syndrome where you just think you're an imposter.
Oh, I looked it up.
Because of this movie?
I looked up what he had just done. And like, and of course there is all the Kevin Smith stuff, but big style.
Me too. I looked
it up. Good Will Hunting, Armageddon. And Shakespeare in Love. Yeah.
So Shakespeare in Love, I would say, doesn't count. Because to his credit, I love him in that. He also was like fourth.
It's a really small lead. I'm not saying it's but I do think that he's basically, what I'm saying is he's fresh off being the funny, charming scene stealer in the Best Picture winner. So now he's going to go toe to toe with America's Sweetheart.
Well, also, it was kind of like the Shakespeare in Love thing in and of itself was kind of like weird and cute because he was dating Gwyneth kind of famously at that moment. And his appearance in that movie was kind of just an adorable thing. Like these two adorable people are in this movie together.
It was
a wink at the
audience. It was very much so. The film that I actually want to bring up because I think it's an interesting parallel to this film is Bounce, which I actually don't hate that movie. Have you ever seen Bounce?
Is Gwyneth in that
too? Yeah, that's the movie where like he doesn't take his plane ticket. He gives it to her husband. The plane crashes.
Year did that come?
That was 2000. So that's the next year.
After.
And what's interesting about that is in that movie, he feels like a man. In this movie, he feels like a boy, and it's only really a difference of about a year. Now, I don't know if that's that Ben Affleck had some sort of, you know, come to Jesus moment and he figured out how to crack the nut or whatever, but it's just interesting because
don't you think it has something to do with Gwyneth?
Absolutely. Comfort. No, for sure. And they're great together in that movie and they have great chemistry. And that movie is better for it. I'm not suggesting that Forces of Nature is as good or anything. It's more about the fact that if that Ben Affleck had been in this movie, this movie could have been better
for
it. But
is that the character?
It's possible.
You know what I mean? Like, I wonder because Ben Holmes is like, oh, I don't like strippers and I just want a regular guy.
He's so
off
shucks.
Like,
it's ridiculous. Yeah. Well, I agree.
Again, like, it's a really kind of shitty, weird, cliched character and it drives me nuts. But like, he's played, first of all, he's played down and out a couple times. Really fucking well. Like Gone Girl, fucking amazing.
That might be the best because the line between Nick Dunn and Ben Affleck is probably pretty thin.
Yeah, which is a brilliant cast.
Which is phenomenal.
I'll throw one out there. Another one out there where like he's kind of riding high in his career. He had just done The Town.
Sure.
After he did The Town, like this guy was golden to the point where he won a fucking Oscar for Argo. He did Company Men in between that.
Oh yeah, the John Wells movie?
Yes.
I've never seen it.
That's a good movie.
Okay.
That is a good like late 90s, early 2000s like Aaron Sorkin-ish. This is about like a moment in time in America movie where this guy loses his job. It takes place during the recession when people were losing their jobs and he has to move in with his parents and it's about his family and he sells it. Like this guy actually I could talk about Affleck all day long. His career.
So here's my question. What's your favorite Ben Affleck performance?
My favorite my favorite Ben Affleck performance is Gone Girl, but I just want to say this about Affleck. He's kind of gone on this weird little dip the last two or three years, like certainly in terms of the tabloid stuff and this bizarre back tattoo and he's made some bad decisions.
So it's like he's right.
That tattoo is unreal.
But that's the point, right? All right. So forget the tattoo. It fucking sucks. But this guy's an actual phoenix. This guy was an international joke. He was Bennifer. He was Geely. Yeah. He was Jersey Girl. He was dead. And he did the thing that we all fucking dream of doing. He rode his way back.
I don't think anybody at this table, at least myself, I can only speak for myself. Can't speak for you, Phil.
It's true.
But
she'll try though.
I love, once again, like I love Ben Affleck and I think he is talented across the board. Yeah. And I think he is more talented than people give him credit for.
I agree
so
with that.
any sort of talk about him in this movie is really not a criticism of him. Like I
don't think anyone it's criticizing.
Okay.
I mean, look, I'm not. I mean, in general, I'm criticizing him in this movie. Like, this is the most insecure I've ever seen him on screen. He is the most out of place. I feel like he feels like I'm not a leading man. I was the friend in Good Will Hunting. I was the you know the he wasn't the lead in Armageddon. That was Bruce Willis's movie. He was fourth
I think his first real lead.
This is his first lead.
Well, this is kind of his first lead. It's a co-lead, but his real first lead is probably Reindeer Games, if we're being honest.
The Charlize Theron?
The Charlize Theron movie, which also not a great movie, but he's pretty good in it.
He didn't really have a great leading performance until The Fucking Town. So, like,
Not a movie that – it's interesting because I'm, like, looking at his filmography right now, and a lot of them are sort of – co-leads, you know what I mean? Where it's like it's him and Sam Jackson, or it's him.
Oh,
and,
that movie,
Changeling. It's a good movie.
Yeah,
or Pearl Harbor, where it's like it's really him and it's whatever. Yeah, the first real thing. I mean, it's crazy to say it, but like Daredevil, which is a terrible movie, is really kind of the first time that he's anointed like
where
a hero with a mask.
Would we argue that he looks and feels uncomfortable in Daredevil?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
better
that
than the better
movie is a turd.
Well, better than this.
But what I guess what I'm saying is, like, maybe he's just not comfortable being front and center in such a way.
Or he wasn't then.
He wasn't then. I think he's now. I mean, Gone Girl is a very confident. I mean, he's got Fincher and,
as
the
town.
Is
as
he front and center in Gone Girl, would you say? Because I
mean,
wouldn't.
It is probably. It's a 50-50.
Oh,
between the two of them,
I think he is. I think he is. I think Gone Girl's a really unique movie in that, you know, very rarely do you have a movie that changes perspective so dramatically.
Yeah.
But the first third of the movie is his, and the last third of the movie is a two-hander. So
I will say this, though, and you keep understandably talking about The Town in Argo. Mm-hmm. I would argue that both of those films are significantly better if he's not the lead in them. I don't really love him in those roles.
Maybe Argo. I think
about how much better Argo is if Jon Hamm is playing that role.
Well, I don't agree with that. But
I mean,
there
or someone of
there
that.
Are people.
Or
a Latino guy.
Yes. Considering that the man he was playing was Latino, yes, that's a fair assessment. More than anything, I think it's interesting to sort of see how this film fits into his trajectory, into his career. What is pretty clear that he learned from this film and Sandra Bullock learned from this film to continue working with Mark Lawrence, even after this movie was a bit of a dud. I am going to give a little bit more context for this film because I think it's necessary that Forces of Nature opened on March 19th, 1999 in first place.
This movie was a fucking hit.
Hold on. Forces of Nature opened on March 19th, 1999 in first place with $13.5 million ahead of True Crime and Anna and the King. It would be number one in the second weekend as well against EdTV and the Mod Squad. It would go on to make $93.8 million worldwide on a $75 million budget.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money. $75 million for this movie is a lot. In 99, what is that, like 125, 130
today?
You're
talking about the budget, but I think the box office is really high for a movie like this. $93 million back then. Again, that's about 170 today. And
sure, but you're also discounting that it made 50 domestically. It didn't do great.
And
it
she's
didn't do
the
that hot here.
Lady from Speed and the lady from – he said
worldwide
it was 93.
I'm going to take
and
that back. It wasn't
from,
a hit.
And, yeah.
It was a failure.
Practical. And While You Were Sleeping, the lady from Speed, While You Were Sleeping, Practical Magic. I mean, yeah it wasn't.
Did she have a top billed lead performance before this?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
What was the one?
While You Were Sleeping.
Oh,
Hope
Floats.
Hope Floats is huge. Speed 2. She was
magic.
Speed 2.
She was in Speed
2
before this. Yeah,
yeah.
That's true.
So she's riding high. So it's not. Yeah. This was not a. My point more than anything is this movie didn't do great, but she still was like, this Mark Lawrence guy, he's got something that I like. And he writes Miss Congeniality for her. He writes Miss Congeniality 2 for her as well. You know, they have a very
notice.
2 weeks notice. They have a very strong relationship.
And 2 weeks notice is his directorial debut.
Yes.
He writes her bad movies.
No, Miss Congeniality is not a bad
People
movie.
Love
Miss Congeniality.
I just rewatched it. It absolutely
actually,
holds up.
Let me pull that back, which I was going to pull back.
careful.
No, I'm serious. Miss Congeniality is a perfect screenplay. It is the screenplay.
Who directed Miss Congeniality?
Donald Petrie Jr.
I'm not joking. It is the screenplay people should read when you want to know how to write a studio movie. It hits all the beats exactly where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. For that reason, it matters.
And it's tailor fit to her, which is important, I think.
Yes. Who else can play the nerd and the beauty queen? Not a lot of people. And I love her. I really do. But for the most part, like she also did All About Steve, right?
Oh yeah,
which is
and
you
that,
know,
was, well, that was and the story sure. about All About Steve is really interesting because she as a producer found that script, like had that, well, she had that script written, like yep. she wanted to make that movie, which is such an interesting, to me, one of the reasons I love Sandra Bullock is because as a person in front of the camera and behind the camera, her career is something that I, not because she's the biggest movie star in the world, but because as a producer, like you can watch the trajectory of the types of roles that she takes, the movies that she chooses to get behind, and the directors that she's choosing to work with, like they're all so interesting, and so
yeah, she's a very interesting actress. I think that she's done a lot of amazing things. I think that Gravity is obviously, you know, one of the things that's at the top of that pile, where, you know, she talked about how she won the Oscar for The Blind Side, but she felt like, you know, Gravity was the thing that she really wanted to show her acting chops. I think she's tremendously talented. But I'll also say too, 2 weeks' Notice made $200 million worldwide. Right. And that movie's that was an unquestionable success.
It was also critically well received.
It was well received too. I mean, listen, I'm not a rom com aficionado. I wouldn't claim to be. I have not seen 2 weeks' Notice, and so I can't speak to it.
I think you might find it delightful.
I know that my roommate loves it,
and I do think it's a nice movie.
It is,
but I think I just think
Mark Lawrence is making easy movies to digest. They are unquestionably entertaining. I think that this is a bit of a weird movie. It's a weird script. He's trying to do things that I, again, commend the swings. I think that had the kid thing been layered in a little bit stronger, to Kenny's point, had we sort of really bought into some of these romantic dynamics, I think you could have stuck the landing.
Here's a question.
But unfortunately, it doesn't do those things.
What do you think about if – so let's say we know Ben Affleck's trajectory, right?
Sure.
We know where he is at this moment. We know why his team thinks that this movie makes sense for him, right? It's Ben's story. It's a rom-com. It's interesting. Like, it's great. Do you think that if someone else who wasn't superstar Sandra Bullock played – Sarah, do you think the movie would have been better?
All right, so I want to take that a different way. I want to make this point. This character is a character only Sandra Bullock plays. So, and she's done it over and over again, All About Steve being an example, where it's not quite the manic pixie dream girl. There's an edge to it. Right, the manic pixie dream girl usually doesn't have a drug problem and a kid that they lost. There's an edge to this character, and it to be honest, it's not my favorite iteration of her. I like two versions of Sandra Bullock. I like kind of Daffy, like While You Were Sleeping, and Speed would fall into that category too. And half of all of Miss Congeniality would fall into that. Like I like that, like. You know, the prettiest nerd.
Playful, silly, a little bit silly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that.
And I love hard drama Sarah Bullock. Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock.
I love hard drama. I think she's so amazing in Gravity. I also think she's so good in A Time to Kill. Mm-hmm. Like these movies where it's just like, look what I can do when I put my fucking mind to it. I think she's awesome.
But this is neither here nor there. This is trying to be both of those
things.
This
reminds me of the Ben Stiller character I hate so much, which is the guy from Dodgeball. It's also the guy from Heavyweights that like I'm like this weird muscled up asshole.
Goodman.
Yes. This like – it's this like – some people like that character, and I think he fucking loves that character. To me, that's just
that
like
character.
I think you love that character. to me, that's like the last character I want to see. And this is Sandra Bullock. This is not the person I want. So, like, do I think if someone else played this character, it would be a better movie? I don't think another person could or would play this character this way.
I think that she takes a character that could have been extremely unlikable, and somehow makes her likable a good chunk of the time.
She does.
And I think that that's, again, a testament to how, you know, charming and winning and watchable she is.
I'll throw someone out there who maybe could have played this. Angelina Jolie.
Ugh.
Well.
I'm coming off watching Half a Girl Interruption.
Girl Interrupted?
I'm having a real tough night, guys.
Yeah.
Girl Interrupted.
You've only seen half?
But she's
I
not
turned it off.
Charming.
Because you texted me midway through saying we weren't going to do that anytime soon. But she is winning There's something about her.
I don't know that. Her.
Do you not like her?
I don't find Angelina Jolie charming or endearing or likable at all. I think she's interesting.
I think she's the greatest actress of our generation.
Are you serious?
I've said it several times.
He's a very big fan.
I think she's an unbelievable actress.
I think she's a good actress. Hold on.
You're hedging because of the guest. Take a stand.
No. I like Angelina Jolie performances. There are a lot of them that don't work for me. I also agree with Clark that I do not think that in the attempts that she's made at rom-coms, which is only really a couple, she doesn't play well against that. She doesn't – similar in a weird way to Maura Tierney, there is this fiercely intelligent, ball-busting quality to Angelina Jolie that I love, and it's the reason she – one of the reasons she won an Academy Award for her performance in Girl Interrupted. But – I don't really want to see her fall in love. I don't want to see her be romantic with people. It's one of my big beefs with The Bone Collector, you might remember.
Well, that's a different thing. But that wasn't the beef. I mean,
it's one of them, but I just,
it was the way they did it.
I did not like them together romantically. Period. I do not want to see
Denzel Washington.
In a long time.
This is a long way of saying that I think that's an interesting choice. I wouldn't. The person that came to mind that I think. And again, this is kind of a weird choice, but I'm going to throw it out there, which is Charlize Theron, who I think could have been interesting.
Yeah,
she's not cute, but I think that I can see her as the edgy, prickly, you know, woman that would be enticing to a Ben Affleck.
And for the record, would you say that in this movie, in this same director, same year, same Ben Affleck, I feel like Angelina Jolie would eat him alive.
Yeah, she'd blow him off the screen.
Like if Sandra Bullock is too much for Ben.
I mean, the same could be said for Charlize Theron.
But at this time,
I'm not sure that she had the.
She was 20. But
I mean, in terms of the experience to, because like Angelina Jolie, we can all agree is a force of nature.
She is just.
I don't know that she could. Who could handle that?
He couldn't handle anybody. Like that's. Kind of what I'm saying is like,
yeah,
Ben was really poorly cast. I know why they casted him. He was so hot. Like that Good Will Hunting thing extended for years and years for both those guys. But like 5, 6, 7 years. But I mean, really until Geely for him. But
you know who would have been interesting, actually, now that you bring up Geely? J-Lo might have actually been an interesting choice.
I don't know.
I actually was just thinking about Brittany Murphy.
Oh, like, R.I.P.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know.
If nothing else, this podcast has proven to us how great an actress Brittany Murphy is.
I mean, but I'm trying to think of, like, people who are in stature would not be.
It's such an interesting choice because, like, on one hand, that's part of the problem with this movie. Like, I think we're hitting on the problem that they had when they were creating this movie, like the studio had, which is basically like, okay, the right person for this movie is a Brittany Murphy. You're totally right. If I'm greenlighting this movie, I'm not spending $70 million on a Brittany Murphy movie, right?
Yeah. No.
So who's like that, like perfect? Because like, those movie stars exist every once in a while. Like I swear to God, you know who this movie would be made with today, and they would never kiss. No offense, Melissa McCarthy. Like that's the movie, right? Like
yeah, I see it as like an Anne Hathaway.
Maybe, but kinda, like,
but then you're in the Sandra Bullock territory.
I feel like the really good, funny version of this is like a Melissa McCarthy. So.
Yeah, it's a weird movie because it's just it's very few things are working about this movie.
I name a thing that does work in this movie?
Absolutely.
Steve Zahn.
Oh, you're so right.
Everyone's MVP.
And his hair.
Steve Zahn.
You know what?
He is great in it.
He's so good in like everything.
Everything he does. He cannot help but be funny.
And charming.
Yeah.
He should have.
He's in Happy Texas. We have that to look forward to.
He should have gotten a TV show. It probably still would have lasted one season, but he should have been the lead of Terriers, for instance, right? Like
he's great in Tremaine.
He could have had his own like scummy Private Eye show. And he would have been awesome.
I would watch him read the phone book, to be honest with
you. He's fantastic.
I just love him.
I know. He's the guy who came up with O'Neaters. It's actually O'Neaters.
And that was, by the way, when I was watching this movie and I forgot for a minute that this was only 1999 movies, this podcast, and not all 90s, I started thinking to myself, I should have talked about That Thing You Do. I should have talked about Practical Magic.
Can we talk about That Thing You Do for half a second?
Sure, it's a great movie.
It is impossible for me to believe that Tom Hanks wrote and directed like I think he did one more recently, but
yeah, Larry Crown.
Larry Crown. So he wrote and directed two movies. Larry Crown, literally, I forgot about. And one of them is this fucking Stone Cold classic.
It's fantastic.
It is a new classic.
It is. And it's crazy.
It's also supremely well cast, too. Like, a lot of those people didn't go off to do other things.
They all have careers.
Yes, but I mean, like, it just goes – in that moment, it was a lightning strike sort of thing where you had just – they all worked at that moment. And whether or not their careers afterwards – but, like, Steve Zahn's fantastic in that movie. Mm-hmm. Liv Tyler's just luminous in that film.
Tom Everett Scott,
who looks and is just playing a young Tom Hanks, but –
whatever.
But nails it. I mean, which is not an easy feat.
And who is his girlfriend? Charlize Theron.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They allegedly discovered her. Like that was one of her first speaking. Things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If not the first.
Giovanni Ribisi. Yeah.
I mean, it's Ethan Embry.
It's a really, really good movie.
It's such a great movie.
It's also a movie that, like, go watch
and watch the trailer. Don't watch Forces of Nature.
Yeah. But I mean, it is very interesting because I'm looking at Steve Zahn here, who one of the movies that I think he's also great in 96 as well is Suburbia, which is the Linklater, Eric, I can't pronounce his last name, but it doesn't matter. He's great in Out of Sight. And then in 99, he does no less than four movies.
Is one of them Saving Silverman? No, that's 2000.
No, that's 2000.
Okay. I was about to say, should have picked that one. I love Saving Silverman.
But he's the voice of Stuart Little. So, Kenny, you have that to look forward to.
Yes!
What an interesting choice for the voice of Stuart Little.
And he's also in a film called Happy Texas, this little weird movie that William H. Macy is in, where he plays a gay sheriff, if I'm not mistaken.
I thought that Michael J. Fox was the voice of Stuart Little.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It is Monty that he plays.
Michael. Okay.
Is that like another mouse? That
must be another mouse. Monty Mouse?
Maybe it's not a mouse. Maybe
written
a cat.
By?
Monty Little?
Stuart Little written by?
Oh, wait. Someone really big.
I know this.
It's not Andrew Kevin Walker, is it?
No.
Is it Joss Whedon? Is it?
What?
M. Night Shyamalan. Comes back to the Sixth Sense.
I knew it was someone really big. And really unexpected. And my guesses are less ridiculous now.
Double episode.
We're just going to do six. We're just going to roll right into
it. Stuart
Little, Sixth Sense, double bill. I mean, that might be the only way to do fucking Stuart Little.
It's kind of rude to one of the great movies.
He also, I forgot he was Rosencrantz in Branagh's Hamlet, too. Anyway, so yeah, Steve Zahn.
When I first met Steve Zahn.
Steve Zahn is an MVP, I just want to say.
I think it was that thing you do was the first time I met him, and he jumped.
That's the first thing you remember him in?
I remember loving him from the moment I saw him.
I think it's
screen.
That thing you do for me as well. That and Suburbia, they were very close to each other. So I don't know which I saw first. I imagine it was that thing you do, but he's always great. He's great. Let's just talk a little more Forces of Nature, shall we?
One more thing for our audience before we get off the Steve Zahn topic.
Yeah.
He was Bad Ape in the most recent Planet of the Apes movie.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know it because his voice isn't the same necessarily,
he's
mocap. But like Steve Zahn having a moment where he is just again not just the funny guy, not just the soft guy. He's really acting, and I just okay.
More Steve Zahn. The world needs more Steve Zahn.
Fucked up this guy's career in a way.
Who's they? Hollywood.
In a way, and mostly his people. That's the way I always look at it. In a way that I'm kind of shocked by, that he never got like the Sean William Scott moment.
But Steve Zahn's worked forever.
I'm sure he's made tons of money, but like this guy has never had his fucking movie.
He didn't get his moment.
Or his TV show, I guess. I'm looking, he was in Mind Games. Mind Games was that Christian Slater thing before Mr.
Robot, where he
was number two. And it just seems like there should have been a time. But you know what? We're a bunch of writers and producers.
We'll make it happen. We'll get him
a
shot.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. So Forces of Nature has 45% on Rotten Tomatoes, which feels right. Kenny might rank it lower. But I mean, it feels right to me. There are two quotes that I pulled out of two reviews that I think are interesting, that I think crystallize a lot of what we're talking about here. Roger Ebert has one of them.
Did not love.
Roger Ebert, one star.
One?
One singular star. Opens the review by saying, "So I'm sitting there looking in disbelief at the ending of Forces of Nature and asking myself, if this is how the movie ends, then what was it about? We spend two endless hours slogging through a series of natural and man-made disasters with Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck, and then that's it. Bronwyn Hughes, Forces of Nature is a romantic shaggy dog story, a movie that leads down the garden path of romance only to abandon us by the compost heap of uplifting endings. And it's not even clever enough to give us the right happy ending. It gives us the wrong happy ending." And again, don't disagree on a purely logistical semantic level. I think that had this been executed differently or cast differently, I'm not sure that he would have had the same issues with it. Now, of course, that's easy for me to say because, like, you know, I'm saying let's make it into a different movie.
No, you're not.
But I do
you're
think
saying
that
you're I'm not really disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
Like as much as like you and I think both agree that this movie is not good. But you're putting it, I think, mostly on the execution of a script, and I think the problems are at script level, and then the execution only made it worse.
That's fair. Oh. I mean, that's understandable. The other review is in Entertainment Weekly. Forces of Nature has the structure of a madcap romantic chase without the Wiggy busting out freedom. If the surprise ending had been set up better, it might have tingled with romantic warmth, but instead it leaves the audience feeling numbly betrayed. We have no idea why these characters have just spent 2 days with each other, and neither apparently do they. That speaks to my point a little bit.
It speaks
to both of our points, but yeah. I think that if the surprise ending had been set up better, it might have tingled with romantic warmth, I think is exactly what we're saying. And I think that, again, I don't think those issues are on a script level. I think those issues are on a casting and execution level. But be that as it may, I think we're all sort of saying that this tried to do something interesting in its third act. It falls on its face. Is that, I mean, for me, I respect the swing. I respect that it tried. It failed. But that all of this is, I feel like, a long way of saying that for me, the reason that I'm going to put it over Runaway Bride, which, again, a dubious achievement, is that it's trying something.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Runaway Bride is trying nothing. Runaway Bride, in fact, is failing at a very low bar that it has set for itself, whereas Forces of Nature has the bar set higher, doesn't hit it, but tries at least to set the bar a little higher. So for me, like, that's why I think it's a more interesting film than it has any right to be. That's sort of where I come out on it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about it, Clark?
I still like the second half much better than the first. Because I think that's where we are getting into more of the we're trying something territory.
Right.
And also I feel like the tension between Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck, like, finally, once they have the romance, once they kiss, it's like it changes, which obviously, yes. But I also feel like Roger Ebert's, you know, I have a tough time with him as a truly. He's not my guru. He's
We've
not.
We've bumped on a fair amount.
I
of
thought he was
too.
My guru.
Yeah.
Until we did 40 podcasts. And we've
referenced
back,
him a lot.
We've referred back to him a lot.
Yeah.
And it's, look, he might have been a product of the times and he was an old man back then, but deeply problematic over and over.
Yeah, but I think, I feel like
his American Beauty review in particular was a real problem.
Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me. But I feel like his, like what the excerpt you just read is very condescending. Like, it's very just like, ugh, what did I just watch? What? And it's like, listen, I understand it's your job as somebody who is a critic to review movies, right? And if you're thinking about it in that way, it's like, should people see this movie? Should they spend their money on it? You know, he is obviously the pioneer of thumbs up, thumbs down. And I don't think it's that simple. And I do think, like, we've just spent an hour talking about The Big Swing. And I think that, like,
we haven't got to play yet.
But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I take a little bit of an issue with him just being like, what's the point? Why did I just do this? And it's like, well, because you know what? Like, if you really want to get into why, like, because both of these reviews, why did we just spend time? Well, because sometimes in your lives, like, I've had experiences where you connect on some weird level with some weird person for 36 hours and then you never see them again and you never talk to them again, but you go, wow, this was a really meaningful experience in that moment. And so I'm not saying that those beautiful experiences made their way onto the screen.
Right.
They didn't always, but I don't think that's fair.
There's a very grumpy old, you know, white man kind of vibe going on here of just like a guy who's just sort of like, I don't really, you know. So, again,
I'm not going to push back that hard because, like, you're right. But also, all right, so your point about these experiences do exist, mm-hmm. Totally agree. I'd also say, you know, like, this is kind of a Before Sunrise type of thing, right? Where, you know, that movie does it perfectly.
Yeah,
right?
It's like probably my top 10 favorite movies.
But that's, it's the exact same idea, you know, kind, in its own way, right? Like, just like two strangers meet, they're together for a period of time, they exchange some kind of intimate moments, and then they go their separate ways.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, movies like that have been done and have been done really well. So I don't need this movie to, like, give me that experience. What I feel like is this movie was an idea, a worthy idea, a noble idea that was so poorly executed. I did feel like – I felt the whole time like this. There, another movie that I kept referring to in my head was The Hangover, which Phil knows I'm fucking crazy about.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And part of the beauty of The Hangover was we really did want Justin Bartha to get home in time. Like, it really did matter for us that he gets found and he goes home to this really nice woman he's about to marry and he's not an asshole and they have a good relationship. Throughout the course of this movie, I'm thinking, why are you going through hell and high water to go to this – to go to Savannah to this person that you've shown literally no affection towards or attraction to – the entire movie, the person that you should be with is in the car with you. Just call her and tell her the fucking wedding's off. On top of that, there's a monsoon. You're not having this wedding anyway.
Well, I would disagree in terms of that they don't have any affection or any sort of chemistry whatsoever between the two of them. And I don't think that that's necessarily fair.
But it matters because it's significantly less than
I'm not disagreeing
than
with
he
you.
Has with the other character that – we are emotionally invested, or we should be at least.
We're talking a little bit in circles just because I do think that the scene in the hotel room, shot differently, directed differently, is a cute scene. I think that it's there on the page. Now, the difference between the Hangover did come to mind when I was watching this movie as well, because I did think to myself, like, this is a strange sort of scenario where, you know, Todd Phillips approaches The Hangover. It's a pretty bro-y movie. I think we can safely say that it has that je ne sais quoi to it.
Well, that's the tone of it, but the structure.
I get that. Out. And that's why I think that this movie, it's also like bright and it's like, it feels like it's having fun. This movie, its photography draws attention to itself. It just feels very gloomy. But again, these are maybe all the reasons that I liked it. Like, it doesn't feel like a romantic comedy. It doesn't lean into the jokes. And again, that's to its detriment. But it also is one of the reasons why I think that it's interesting. I also was curious, because you're from the South.
Mm-hmm.
This movie has a weird South-North thing that it's kind of doing.
Yeah.
That I'm really I left it trying to be like, is it shitting on people from the South? Is it
– or from the North?
Or from the North? Because, like, you've got the two sets of parents that, you know, New York versus –
there's such a cynicism in this movie.
Which is interesting.
To any kind of outsider, sincere, emotional, like, understanding between two people that, like – I mean, we haven't even got into that, but, like, the morality of this movie –
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Conflicted with my soul in such a bad way. Like, this idea that, like, people are not meant to be in love, that they throw out the entire movie, and even the end of this movie, I will maintain he did wind up with the wrong person.
Should he have ended up with Sarah or alone?
He should have ended up with Sarah.
For how long?
For who knows. But that's not what happens in a romantic comedy. A romantic comedy, any kind of movie, you end when you end and you don't know what happens after that.
But
right?
Did you feel – and I this is a genuine question. But did you feel as though his feelings for Sarah were anything more than fleeting? Like to me, this was a guy who is having serious doubts about his impending nuptials. And so he meets this girl who seems like a firecracker, and she seems like a girl that he's never met before. And he doesn't really know how to control himself around her, and she's sparked a lot of things in him that he finds interesting, and he's drawn to her sexually to a certain extent. But then when they do kind of – when they do kiss and they do – you're just like – they don't feel like a couple.
Yeah, they feel like friends.
They feel like fuck buddies. Like they just feel like two people that –
they didn't fuck, right? So they botched that – I do. Yes, I think they botched that scene. Like I think that – I said
they couldn't go there. Okay. Otherwise. Yeah.
I think
they couldn't go there for the reason that I pointed out at the beginning. Because
Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck need to play brother and sister. I like their chemistry when they get real with each other, when they're having fun, when they're goofing off. Like I do think they have chemistry, but it's not a sexual or romantic chemistry. I also, when I, you know, as we were talking a little earlier, I thought about The Proposal. Because Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds, like Ryan Reynolds playing the younger guy, her playing like the worldly experienced woman, and yet Ryan Reynolds goes toe to toe with her and she kind of goes and softens a little, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that might be the difference. But I don't think though, I didn't think that they belonged together though.
But that's not, that's not really like what I'm like. Let me make this a little clearer. I don't think that any of the possible endings would have been satisfying because of all that we've said here, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think in the absence of a satisfying ending, the most earned ending in this movie, where the characters just spent 2 hours getting intimate, and I mean like exchanging intimate details about their lives and helping each other grow as people, are the two that most would have satisfied my desires as a moviegoer. So I'm hesitant to give it bonus points for doing what I think was detrimental to the movie and do something I acknowledge was a big swing, but I do think that it was so incredibly unearned that I would have preferred just a classic movie. And we did Never Been Kissed. And I brought up The Proposal because I think The Proposal is a tremendously well done romantic comedy. And sometimes it just is supposed to be
about pedophilia. The Proposal. Never Been Kissed?
Oh, that's on. Oh, no. The Proposals are really well done. And sometimes it just feels right.
Sure, and this one doesn't in that way. I would agree.
I would also argue too that, you know, we're going to watch, we have a whole bunch of other romantic comedies to watch this year. The Bachelor being one of them.
Which one's The Bachelor?
It's Chris O'Donnell and Renee Zellweger. Watched the trailer for that the other day and wow. So my feeling on it is you would have been bored stiff if this movie had just hit every beat and done everything.
Anyway.
See, I wasn't. I thought I was at the very least. I was interested in what I was watching. It was a mess, but I will always take a mess that is interesting to a movie that hits all the beats and is boring as
shit. I also think that you just touched on something really important, which is that we're forgetting the time. We're forgetting, like, yes, it's 99. It's the end of the 90s, but the rom-com was like everything. Yeah. This was
alive
everything.
And well.
And so the notion that, you know. Yeah, I mean, that almost makes me appreciate that much more, is that for all the romantic comedies, like all the shitty romantic comedies that you guys are going to have to sit through. Not to say that this is a great movie by any stretch, because it's not, but like, whoa, Runaway Bride, The Bachelor.
But we
like,
also, on the flip side, you know, we had Notting Hill, which is arguably one of the top five greatest romantic
comedies. And this is why rom-coms
are
alive and well in this time period.
Guys, in no way am I arguing, and you guys know this, but I'm just going to reiterate. In no way am I arguing that every movie has to follow a typical structure.
No.
I'm very pro taking the chance. But when this fails so plainly and flatly, and that's why I think it got those really shitty reviews, because it is a really frustrating movie. It also bothers me, and like Phil, you know this, But it bothers me when a movie takes a swing like this and misses because it dissuades other people from taking those similar swings. And that is just disappointing going forward. Like, there aren't a lot of romantic comedies that one can point to, certainly after this, that took similar swings. Because it's a movie like this fails, and people say, well, you tried it with Forces of Nature. It failed. Why don't you just have the protagonists end up together? So,
yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think that there are a lot of problems with this. I think that, you know, as we've stated, they should have made some other choices. You know, my response to the choices is to be more interested in them rather than to dismiss them. But I totally hear where you're coming from. I think that there is a, you know, had this been. Truthfully, I think that had Maura Tierney been recast, I think so much of this movie is drastically different. I think that if Maura Tierney is someone that Ben Affleck has a genuine chemistry, a genuine, you know, you're rooting for her as well. I think if you had that, I think this movie probably goes up 20% in your mind. I think that it was such a third rail problem with this film that, and I'm in agreement with you, that the stakes aren't there because you don't have that investment in her and in their relationship. And when you cut back to her, which is relatively infrequently, you find yourself just being like, okay, I don't care about you because of, unfortunately, the actress that's portraying the role just doesn't have the, you know, the dynamics that are necessary for that to sing. I also just, again, I think that if this film had been more, and maybe generic is the wrong word, or pedestrian, but had this been filmed in a way that was far less, drawing far less attention to itself and allowed itself to be just a clean, you know, blue skies or when it's, you've got weather or whatever, I just think you've got, there's a, and I mentioned this, you know, when we get into the plot, but like there's a moment when they get on the bus with all the old people. It's shot like a fucking Terry Gilliam movie. It's like all these like crazy fisheye lenses and like racking into their faces and stuff. And I'm just like, what is happening? Like, I think this is bonkers. But again, that's the type of stuff that removes you and pulls you out of it.
It's so, if you're going to use tricks, it's so important that the tricks are motivated by story.
I don't disagree with you.
I know. Yeah, and that's, I don't know. You know, it's, if it were a more generic,
conventional at the very least.
No, convention. Yeah. If it were a more conventional movie, I also keep going back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which like
it's a great movie.
It's one of the fucking greatest movies ever made.
I don't like that movie.
Tell me why.
Because I didn't grow up on it. So I watched it for the first time at the holidays last year, and I was like,
"That's it?
That's the it's, yeah, and really. That happens to me.
I watched the first time as a grown up too.
Maybe it's because you're a dude.
It is about two dudes.
And they're like, I really like movies about no, no, two and women. I'm not saying that it's impossible to do both and vice versa and all the things. I'm just saying, like for instance, I quite like The Hangover, but I do disagree with what you said earlier about the bride being endearing or you care about them. Like as a lady, I was like, who is this? What? She's in it for 2 seconds and all she's doing is calling. Where the fuck is he? But the journey, I love. The guys are great. They're amazing. It's a fucking hilarious movie. But with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, like to me, it's just so, it just doesn't hold up. Honestly, like there's nothing special about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I don't want to make it a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles podcast.
I understand that I am in the minority and I'm not arguing otherwise. I'm just saying.
And I am often in the minority when it comes to movies, and I strongly respect contrarian opinions about classic movies or movies that have been deemed classic by the public. And I totally respect that. And I don't really want to defend it, but I do want to say, I think it's one of the best movies ever made. And I also think part of that is because of the ending, which is I'm so beautiful. It's such a beautiful ending where essentially Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is a love story between these two men, right? And it's a emotional story between these two men. And at the end of this movie, Steve Martin goes with his family and John Candy walks away down the street. And you think that could be the end of this movie. You really don't know. Tonally speaking, you don't know the ending it's giving you, right? It could be that that's just – that it was all about the journey to get Steve Martin home and that's the end of it. But Steve Martin turns around and goes and brings him back for Thanksgiving. And it is so fucking gorgeous. It warms my heart in such a beautiful way that I almost feel like that's the ending I wanted in this movie. Like, I almost feel like the ending I wanted in this movie was Ben Affleck turning around at the end and going and finding Sandra Bullock. Even if they were just going to be friends and even to be just be like, let's continue our relationship that's so important.
Yeah, I mean, I will agree that it is weird that she sees him with Maura Tierney at the end and just like pieces out. Like, there's a part of me that feels like there's some way of folding her into that ending, you know, and then the shitty pitch is that, you know, Ben Affleck helps her reconnect with her son in some way. You know what I mean? Or I don't know what it is, but she just sort of, they just kind of fracture at that point, which I agree to Kenny's point, we've invested in this relationship. So for it to not come to fruition in some form or another, even if it just means to help her find her kit or whatever it is, I agree it that does.
I mean, literally could have been a letter correspondence.
Like the lake house, but even
the lake house hits that, hits those beats. There's no closure.
I think the reason that we want closure is once again because Sandra Bullock is Sarah. Like, that is my biggest issue, is I don't want them to end up together. And honestly, I don't feel like they need to have a relationship after this, because this is Ben's story. This is Ben's story of coming to learn that he likes being square. He likes Bridget. He likes Bridget, and he learned that. And he gained that life experience. He had the best bachelor party you could have, best 72-hour bachelor party you could have had via Sarah. And then Sarah's love story is with her son, because I don't think Sarah wants to be with Ben. I think Sarah's like, this is fun for now and I'm having a great time, but at least she knows. She even says that to him.
Yeah.
She says to him, you're not in love with me, and I know that.
But because she has low self-esteem. She's like, no one should be in love with me. That was the whole idea.
But isn't it also, you know, something to be said for the fact that no one should be in love with her because she knows enough about herself to know that she has issues and she hasn't fixed them. And she knows enough about life, and she can see by looking at Ben, like, dude, you got your own thing going on over there. You don't need to fuck up your whole trajectory on a whim.
I think you're both right, and I'm not just saying that, but I do think that both sides of this are true. I think that there's a way to have your cake and eat it too, and unfortunately they either didn't attempt it or were unable to find a way to figure it out. I think that, you know, in my head as you guys were talking, I was thinking, you know, who could have played Bridget and made it palatable? A name that comes to mind in 99 is Reese Witherspoon.
So weird. I was thinking the same person.
Because she's a sweet little Southern girl
yeah. that you're like, okay, yeah. I would do everything I could to get back to her. And I think that I would have bought so much of the cutesy pie kind of stuff that they have. And I would buy her pulling that out of Ben Affleck. Like, it's unfortunate.
It's a good point.
And also, can I point something else out? I noticed that Maura Tierney and Sandra Bullock don't not look like each other. And Ben Affleck and, hold on, I wrote his name down because it was very sad, David Strickland, who was on Suddenly Susan, his life was very cut short, which is really sad. But David Strickland and Ben Affleck look alike. Yeah. So yeah. I noticed that, like, all four of our leads kind of resemble each other, and I thought, like, yeah, why get a blonde person in here? Yeah. Get, like, you know, Bradley Cooper in Wedding Crashers, mm-hmm. like the big jacked up guy who's like kind of broed out, and have that be David Strickland's character. You know,
but
like,
even the parents all kind of look, they do. Yeah. Unfortunately,
they look
similar.
Like doppelgangers of each other. But all right, so the Maura Tierney point, because I've been kind of struggling with your take on her. Because I really like her as an actor.
I love Maura Tierney, just to be too. Very, very clear.
Well, no, and I'm not saying you don't. Like, I can sense that. But Maura Tierney playing a girl from Savannah with her fucking neutral northeastern accent is fucking stupid. And also, like, she's got this New York cynicism to her.
Yeah.
And, like, I would honestly, I mean, like, I feel like I would crawl through glass to root for her. Like, I don't know how else to explain
it.
No,
I hear
you. There's something about her, especially after watching Four Seasons of the Affair, where I'm like, she is someone that I want to see win, and also her personal story and all the shit she's gone through. And like I can graft that onto her. But I do think back to the Cameron Diaz of it. And part of it, you know, interestingly enough, not like this really matters, but like Ben Affleck's 8 years younger than Sandra Bullock and he's 6 years younger than Maura Tierney in this movie.
He feels it.
It feels – it would have been different. Cameron Diaz was in her early 20s during that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know Sandra – I know Julie Roberts was playing 28, but she was older than that in My Best Friend's Wedding. And there's something about this wounded child. Like it's not really child, but this wounded younger person that you didn't want to see hurt by this. I never felt that with Maura Tierney. But she also cheated. Like that's in the script.
That was fucked up.
That's also in the script.
We have to talk about the plot. Because we've been talking for an hour
and 20
minutes.
I did not think this would go as long as it did, but it is a very interesting movie.
It is an interesting movie, and it has elicited a very interesting conversation. let's just quickly get through the plot just because, you know. So we open a terrible credit sequence with like things flying around in clouds and shit. It's weird. And then we've got the drum and bass of Ben Affleck's bachelor party or Ben's bachelor party. Ben's grandfather has a heart attack at the bachelor party. He tells Ben that
my grandfather had a heart attack at my bachelor party.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. No grandfathers at bachelor parties. Like that's like it's a 75 person bachelor party and the grandfather's there.
Anyway, so the grandfather has a heart attack. In his hospital bed, he tells Ben that he was never really into his grandmother. Which plants seeds of doubt in Ben's head about his impending nuptials. Bridget decides to head down to Savannah early to prep for the wedding. Stop me if I'm getting this wrong. While he stays in New York with his grandfather?
I think Ben is afraid to fly, and so he's delaying the flight as much as he can. Okay. She goes down early I think he's delaying the flight as long as he can. Maybe he uses
and using the
grandpa.
Excuse of the grandfather.
Exactly. Okay. I think.
Ben then sees Sarah, played by Sandra Bullock, making out with a guy in the airport. Ben tries to write his vows on the plane, and Sarah starts snickering at him as he's writing his vows. We find out that he's like a book cover blurb guy.
He's a jacket book cover writer.
A bird flies into the propeller, but the plane crashes into a sign. That sequence was the first one where I was like, okay, so that's how they spent $75 million. We're just like, this is so unnecessary. Now Ben is even more afraid to fly, so Sarah and him decide to rent a car, but there are no cars. They find some guy that's willing to share the whole thing with them, who I believe was in The Big Lebowski. I think he's like the dude's landlord in The Big Lebowski.
Maybe.
But I could be wrong.
He looks so familiar, but I really couldn't figure out where I knew him.
And then during their drive, we have our first big needle drop, which is the Low Fidelity All-Stars Battle Flag, which I will always think of Carter being stabbed on ER to that song. So for all the big ER fans out there, clearly none of them in this room, Ben and Sarah are arrested when the guy they share the rental car with smokes some pot and drops the joint, and then Ben has to grab the wheel and the cops pull it. It's all a little bit convoluted. And also, that sequence, geographically, I found very confusing. I was like, how did the cops? It doesn't matter. Then they decide to take a train. The train goes the wrong way. The train stops at one point on a bridge. Sarah climbs onto the roof of the train, which feels incredibly dangerous and unlikely. Like, this train feels like
the train was stopped,
but it also
on a bridge
but
over
it also
water.
But the way they got out made me think like it was an old hobo train, like those trains that had those big sliding doors.
I'm getting the sense that I'm not supposed to be pointing out how stupid this movie is.
Of course I'm not.
But this movie is so fucking stupid. Notes are like, this is stupid. This is stupid. I love Maura Tierney. This is stupid. Like, it's just
again, I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but I do think that so much of this is execution dependent. This movie was not directed with a light touch. If this had been directed by someone who understood where the fun was, who understood, like, stand back, let these people be movie stars, let these people do what they got to do. But instead, it felt like it was directed within an inch of its life in an effort to somehow make it a better movie. And in the process, I think she kind of sucked a lot of the life out of the movie. Take this scene in particular where you've got, like, this – they've stopped on the train. They climb onto the roof. Sarah convinces him to yell – or just to scream into the wilderness or whatever. And again, it's a cute scene, fine, you know, the two of them, but then it punches out to this insane, like,
well, I was gonna say, like, that kind of looks good. It just, it feels,
it looks cool, but it's
apropos of nothing.
It's apropos of nothing.
But that's the point. Like, it look like so much of this movie to me is like, all right, so cool shots, cool plane crashes, cool weather sequences, cool, you know, like even cool small things, like in the hotel room with the lighting, like that's cool in a different movie. Mm-hmm. Cool ending, or cool ending idea, but like all apropos of nothing, all motivated by nothing. Yeah. All, you know, like all these insane buys. And the reason I brought up the grandpa thing is like right in the beginning, there are so many buys you have to just
get into the everything. Plot.
And then they hit the dead horse with the grandpa says sleep around. Kenny Banyan, the plane's asleep around. The guy in the guy who they do the rental car with says sleep around.
I mean, I do think though that there are positive attributes about this movie. Like, I know that it's easy to pile on to the things that aren't working, and I understand why we're doing that to a certain extent. But I also think that there are some nice things. There's two things in particular that I'm about to bring up. The first is I love the shots of the hail and the rain, of that aerial shot of them with all the rain coming down. It's really beautiful. It's a great shot.
It is. It's cool.
It's there's someone with an eye behind the camera that is trying to do something interesting here. Again, not successful in a lot of ways. But then we have the department store beats, which, again, apropos of kind of nothing, not exactly motivated by anything from a story perspective, but the two of them are the most charming they've been in the movie up until this point. It feels like Career Opportunities, which is a cute movie.
I love that movie.
You know, they've got walkie-talkies, and there's something very sort of like if the movie – and again, it's also the only sequence in the film – brightly lit where the camera's not doing anything crazy and it's just letting them be cute and goofy. If the film had been more of that, I think that we would have had a better film on our hands, or a more successful film.
It's so weird because in that moment, I was just – that has the sense – it was like a Walmart or a Target or something like that.
It's a Kmart, I think.
But Kmart. It has the sense of like – someone saying we're spending too much money and we need to do a couple of
slow
days.
Slow down. Yeah,
we need to do a couple of days in one location, right?
Yeah.
That being said, like that helps the movie.
It's a breath of fresh air in the film in that time. It's also – Ben seems to get what he's doing in those scenes. It all just feels like everything just kind of got taken down to a ground level and they were allowed to just kind of goof around. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, what I was going to say is to your point of we're spending too much money, you asked me earlier about the North and the South thing. Mm-hmm. And one thing that as a person from the South who loves Savannah that I thought of was we don't see Savannah in this movie.
Only the one.
Which is crazy to me. Like, and we spend so much time in rooms in this house, which – is also crazy because if you've ever – like, for instance, if you're watching Sharp Objects, which is not the South, but it is this grand old
really
small town money, you see that house. The house is decorated in such a way that if you know anything about Southern people and you know anything about old Southern money, you know that that house would have been something to look at. Every little piece would have been antique and old and special. So I wanted to point that out. Like the biggest – I mean, yes, we have that weird North and South like back and forth between the parents and they don't get along and they think he's bougie and whatever. But and they keep – Ben's parents keep defending him. But the other thing I noticed was like we don't see any of the South. And we don't see any of Savannah, which is one of the most beautiful places in the United States. And all you see is that backyard, which is like there's so much more.
You also see the backyard in the middle of a fucking hurricane.
Right.
Yeah. So to your point, they could have so easily contrasted the bullshit that Ben's going through with the beauty of Savannah. It could have been
– the beauty could have been her, meaning like Maura Tierney.
Of course.
Savannah
it could have made it feel warm and comforting and everything you want. And also to that point, like considering the ending of this movie – there was no conflict between Sandra Bullock and Ben Affleck outside of the one, in my opinion, botched scene that had the kiss in the middle that like whatever. But like it should have been these two people who fucking hated each other.
Well, it happened one night. It should have been two people from two different sides of the – again, they're kind of – and I just – this just sort of as we're talking. The North and South of it all I think is supposed to create a situation where it feels like two people from two different types of – two different places on the country.
She was like South Carolina-ish?
Sandra Bullock. I don't even remember where.
No. I agree. I think that – I don't know where
she was.
Was
that what she was supposed to be?
But
I think her – she has a former life in the South. That's why she's going back there.
Yeah, because her husband's there with her kid.
Well, she's going back for the bagel store.
But anyway.
We haven't gotten to the bagels.
We're going
to
get there. So – Sarah reveals that she's been married twice. She has a kid. The kid's in the South with the husband, and she wants to try to reintegrate herself into his life. Again, this is where like there's a real lack of specificity, which is the problem. You don't understand why she left the kid. You don't understand why the marriage didn't work. You know, abandoning your child is a big fucking deal, and you're not entirely sure why. And that not jiving makes a significant part of this movie not work. But that being said, we then see Richard Schiff. He shows up. He's
– don't you love beardless Richard Schiff?
Not as much as I like Richard Schiff with a beard.
I mean like he's such an interesting guy in his own little way because he was in movies like this without his beard playing the schlub. And then he grows a beard and all of a sudden he's like kind of this hot bald guy. It's like it's such a weird thing. Yeah. Like
he doesn't have a beard in Lost World, I don't think, right? When he dies in Lost World. I don't remember if he does or not. But
no, he's played all these schlubs before. And it's weird. Like Toby.
So then Ben agrees to pretend to be Sarah's husband and a doctor to get on the bus with these old people to basically scam a ride.
Because then, that's her quirky thing is that she makes up stories.
Right.
Right? Like, why is he a doctor? For those who aren't listening, no reason. Sarah just makes up. She's just literally making up a story.
Yeah.
But they were also insulted when they found out he wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, because he also saved someone's life. As a doctor.
After the crazy sombrero ride, which was like
a
fever dream.
I was.
That was the craziest thing.
I thought we were in Mexico until all of a sudden we're in Fayetteville. I mean, like.
But that ride looked insane.
And I put a bunch of old people on that ride. It was pretty funny.
Anyway, so that was kind of cool. Someone has a heart attack. Ben pretends to be a doctor, saves the guy's life. Then we get to a motel that feels like the motel from Blue Valentine.
Oh, I thought
it was shot so darkly. And I was just like, oh, God. Like, it was kind of grimy and weird. And, like, it was trying to be sexy. I also, her behind the see-through thing where she's, like, sexily taking off her clothes. But he can't see her, but he can see her. And then he's, like, all conflicted. It's very strange.
It felt like such a movie construct.
Yeah, right? Like, but it looked cool. This is my big thing with this movie is that shit doesn't work, but I'm like, but it looks interesting. So I kind of – I don't know.
I get what you're saying. Like that didn't really bother me outside of the blatant objectification. Like, like if you want to get sexy, you get sexy.
But I think I think Sandy wanted it at that point, meaning like wanted to –
Right.
Brent. I think she was probably like, yeah, it's sexy time. I'm going to run around in my underwear. Yeah. I'm going to be cool. I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I feel like that was something she was trying to do.
Yeah.
She was trying to exude that.
Nicole Kidman just got to play the sexy sister in Practical Magic. So she probably was like,
I love Practical Magic. Have you seen Practical Magic?
Yeah. I definitely haven't seen the last 15 years, but I definitely saw it.
It's
like
a fun movie.
Like five times.
It's more fun than...
Yeah, Nicole Kidman's like kind of the sexy, wild, quirky one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And who kills Goran Visnjic. Yeah. if you could see Clark's face right now.
I love Practical Magic
so did my roommate loves Practical Magic.
Yeah. Stockard Channing is there.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's great.
This movie's beating me up. But what happens here is one of the biggest buys in the movie and it drives me so fucking
Which is that Steve Zahn and his girlfriend are at this motel?
But who's his girlfriend?
That was the maid of honor.
The maid of honor.
And it's a weird thing. Look, I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but it's the concept of the forces all around us, all the fates. Sure. Like, of course he left the ring, so then he had to go back. And so then, of course, they meet up together. It's like in Home Alone, like when the family walks in at the very end and she's, just ridden the bus. And he's like, yeah, we took the plane you didn't want to take.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm cool. Yeah. The Steve Zahn leaving the ring is fine. Coincidence to get into a plot is great. Coincidence to solve a plot is really bad. Yeah. But – and in this one in particular, just – even if – like my issue is Steve Zahn is with the maid of honor. We never met her. She's about to become an incredibly important character.
Who is also not Jennifer Grey, right?
No.
Man.
But it kind of looks like
her. For the longest time, I thought it was Jennifer
Grey. And then there's like the simple logic problem of like – once she finds out, call Maura Tierney. Don't go all the way to the wedding, get in your maid of honor outfit, like and stand there in the monsoon and then tell her. But
yeah, it's a really big buy. I don't have anything to say other than like it's like an unfortunate thing at this point in the movie where like things are supposed to be turning.
I mean, that doesn't even like take into the account of all the gin joints in all the world aspect of it. But like I'll even buy that. It's just like to me, introduce her before. That doesn't seem that hard to me. Yeah, you know.
I don't disagree. Ben and Sarah then get into an argument about sort of commitment and relationships in the hotel room. He calls her out for picking terrible men. She calls him out for not loving Bridget. He then calls her out for abandoning her child, and then they kiss. It's a lot. There's like – it's a crazy scene. But like again, in some weird way, I think they kind of pull off the scene.
And I would have gone all the way. Like to me that.
Oh, you mean like them having sex?
The buy, that was honestly, it was like halfway my favorite scene of the movie because like I love
characters
yelling at each other, saying really mean things to each other, acting in a totally different way, and then going all the way.
If I also may, I feel like that's the first time that I saw the Ben Affleck that I love.
Me too. Yes.
He's smirking the first whole and time,
only. Yeah.
And he's banging his luggage around, but he's laughing, kind of like fucking half laughing. That's the reason that we love him in Gone Girl, because he always has the smirk, right? And it's like, that's why he's Ben Affleck. Here he's Ben Affleck for the first time. And that's why, for me, the movie kicks over in that
into something
scene.
Interesting at that point, because then...
Well,
then
I would just say, I just want to make this point. It's the only time in the movie for me that he's given anything interesting to play.
Well, because that's the character comes to life a little bit because there's a little portion of him. It's this and then the Western Union thing catching on fire.
That was kind of funny.
Which was kind of funny. Yeah. And it's those two things in concert that feel like he kind of goes, fuck it. Like that's when he kind of like clicks and says like, I give up.
Yeah.
The fates are against me.
Reminds me a little bit of the Bringing on the Dead ambulance crash.
Yes.
You know, where
he's
just
like
laughing at it.
It's like, this is fucking crazy.
Like, so those are the beats that I wanted out of this movie. I wanted,
and had that been sooner, I think we would, you know what I mean? Like, you have to remember, we're 40, 50 minutes into this movie, probably something like that. Like, if this energy had been there way sooner, I think that this movie would have been able to
lose the Tarzan scene, lose the
oh yes, yes, sorry, yes,
like
yes,
up
yes.
on the top of the train, lose the fucking carnival scene. I know we have to
sombreros,
figure out that
but to your point, like there's so much here, like this movie is so thematically off because there's so much here in the idea of forces of nature.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, there's like, very few actual forces.
Well, there's a lot. I really was paying attention. And like the thing is, they're not particularly clever. They're not particularly interesting.
They don't stay with you.
There are many, many instances where you can go, get it, forces of nature, get it, fate, get it. But it's not as cool as the set piece of the Western Union or what, you know what I mean? Or the hurricane.
For instance, to lead into the Western Union scene, which like truthfully is what this movie should have been, right? The movie should have been
a series of things like Western Union.
Every step forward, it's two steps back because of things they can't control.
It should have been Final Destination, but trying to go to a wedding.
I would have signed me up for that.
Remember why they needed money?
To get a car?
But why did they not have money?
Oh, because she lost her wallet stolen because Ben was taking a nap, which was also like, once again, you're just like, wait a second.
In a laundromat.
So I'm basically pitching you have every natural disaster and force of nature at your disposal in this movie. You are explicitly selling me on this idea that like everything that the earth can do to conspire against you is going to happen, and you have some fucking bum steal the wallet. Like they could have literally been caught in a flood holding on to trees and the wallet could have gone down the water and that could have been, because obviously they had to lose money.
Flashbacks.
It's
Chill Factor.
Chill Factor. I this is not as bad as Chill Factor.
So then Ben and Sarah
start, feels similar to Ben.
What's interesting too is outside the Western Union is also the moment when Ben, as I said, kind of says fuck it, but then he starts like making out with her in public.
Yeah.
Like he leans in, he kisses her with the fire and the whatever. They go back to the motel, they're busted by the old people for lying, and then they make out more. Or you think they're making out, and then it's revealed that it's actually Maura Tierney making out with Strickland, right?
Yeah.
And that was a moment for me where I was like, fuck that. Like that was because it felt I didn't like it because it was protecting Ben.
Yep.
Rather than doing something that felt motivated on the more Tyrion side. She didn't even seem into that guy.
She wasn't.
She seemed bored.
He sucked.
He does suck. Would the Phil Collins thing when he sings Phil Collins to her? I was like, what is
what
this?
What a weird scene that was.
In like not the worst voice ever. Like that was the weirdest part of that.
No. I was
like,
this isn't bad.
This is the thing. And see, okay, I'm sorry, but
I love that song.
If we had had more time with any of these real characters, we could have actually seen that Maura Tierney's character really did leave the star of the show back in Savannah. And she really is compromising by marrying knucklehead Ben. Like, meaning compromising in the way that her parents see it, right? Like, she is the force of nature going against her parents, going against the town, going against her culture. But if we don't get any time with them.
All right, so, weird comp. Weird comp alert.
Yeah.
Superman Lives.
Okay.
Superman Lives does a very cool thing
Superman
in that.
Superman Returns?
You know what I'm talking about. Superman Returns. Okay. Brandon Routh.
Yeah, yeah.
Does a very cool thing in that movie.
You know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
I think Superman Lives is the tagline or something like that.
Superman Forever. Superman Robin. There's a very cool thing in that movie, and that's not make James Marsden suck.
Yes, absolutely, because it makes it interesting.
The whole movie you're like, if she goes with Clark – we lose this decent guy.
That was the most Superman Returns. That love triangle was the most interesting part of that movie, and that's saying a lot. It shouldn't have been for a Superman movie, but I agree with you. It was actually smart.
It's a bold stroke, and I wonder, and I don't even know the fucking answer, but like if in the reimagining of this movie where Reese is playing Maura Tierney and all this other stuff happens, like. What would it look like if this guy was cool? If this guy not like cool like the fucking quarterback, like actually like charming.
A decent guy that you've sort of that you
what
bought.
If he's Paul Rudd? You know, it's always like what if he's Paul Rudd? Yeah. Then like how do you go through this movie?
Well, because
you know?
This is again, and I don't mean to say this again, but again, this comes down to casting. Like it comes down to had these roles been cast better, they would have popped more. Because the script, to your point, is not servicing these ancillary characters in a very good way. Like it's just not. So if it's cast by people that you're rooting for, then all of a sudden it changes everything.
It would be better.
So, it would be better.
I've come around to your point, but
it took me an hour and 42 minutes, but I feel like we did it.
Well, that it would be better.
Clark is like,
we're talking as long as the movie is.
We're longer than the movie.
We do that every podcast.
But so just to keep moving, because we need to keep moving, we now get to a place, again, which I was like, this was stupid, but her convincing Ben to strip for
so
money.
I like this scene.
Okay.
I'm going to say.
Defend it, ride for it.
It's dumb. It's so dumb.
It's cute though.
But the actual dance that they do on the tabletop, I giggled a couple of times.
I will dissent, obviously. I don't like this scene for two reasons.
Okay.
One, don't like the setup, obviously. Like, I just like that.
We've also seen it how many times?
Detroit Rock City did it. Yeah. But this does it. Ooh. You know, this does the whole gay panic thing. But I can let that go. It's 1999. Yes. If you're going to do this, oh my God, get fucking naked.
Okay.
Like,
he never takes his shirt off.
He doesn't even take his shirt off.
Which was weird. Like, it was totally a weird.
Do you think
weird...
it's because Ben Affleck at this time doesn't have the physique? To be able to pull
it
off.
But isn't that actually kind of cute? And isn't it? So if rom-coms are
all about. Already fucking out at this point.
If rom-coms are all about being cute, isn't it kind of cute that like he's this like skinny book jacket writer, but then starts to have fun with it? Yeah. Although I will say, when Ben Affleck starts to have fun, which he does in this scene, it's infectious. Like once again, it's not as strong of a moment as when they're fighting in the hotel room, but there was a little glimmer of that goofy Ben Affleck I love.
I think to my point, the far bigger sin in this scene is not going further with what you're talking about, because there is, and then it goes away. Yeah. Like it's like, all right, we got what we needed out of him. He's opened up. That's enough. Oh no. You're playing a gay panic beat. Get this guy to go all the way and face his fears.
I agree. I'm going to say this again. I agree with both of you. I'm going to say this, though. I do think that Sandra Bullock is having a blast up there on the stage.
She's awesome in this scene.
And she's having a great time. Yeah. And that is infectious. And so much so that you start to see Ben getting into it. So that part of it is fine.
We're all saying the same thing, which is
the periphery
against
of it. Yeah.
A, like a, almost despite itself,
yeah,
it starts to work. And then they lose their nerve.
Yeah. Also, I do know that this scene is played for laughs, and I understand. But by the time we shoot this scene, we're in the South. And so if you're in a gay bar in the South, the guys – it's a Southern gay bar, meaning mm-hmm. like it's probably – less flashy or out as a gay bar, and so
which is clear. It's right. There's no signs whatsoever that make it look like a gay bar.
Right, and so I mean, I guess I don't really know where I was going with that. I guess what I'm saying is I don't know. I guess as a straight lady, I shouldn't be talking about if something is – I don't know. I just – I didn't find it – like I thought about it. I actively was like in 2018, I'm sitting here watching this scene.
Yeah.
Is this truly tone deaf and offensive? Does it make sense for the context of the scene? Like they wandered into a gay bar. They didn't know it. And now they want Ben Affleck to strip, and I don't know. It's a weird thing.
Again, I would say
I just don't think it needed to be gay men. It just, you know what I mean? Like if it was women.
It just feels like, you know, yet another moment in search of a setup.
Yeah.
Well, it's a wasted opportunity. That honestly, you know that's what it is, because the reason it can't be women is because we're all looking at Sandra Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be the guys, right? Because the joke that we're ultimately going after is, I'm not interested in you. How much for you?
Oh, no. Yeah.
In the trailer. Yeah.
No, like, you mean it was a...
Could have been an all women.
Like ladies.
No. But, and what I'm saying is that joke doesn't work because you know.
So now we're basically in a race to the wedding for all intents and purposes. You know, and as much as it's on the nose, I didn't hate the idea of Ben and Bridget getting together in the middle of a maelstrom. Like I think that as sort of, you know, whatever, it worked for me. I just, first of all, I thought it looked really well done considering, and it worked for me. Now, the context,
well, they got together in the eye of the hurricane.
Yes.
And the fact that, like, I'm a believer that when you pick a theme that you should stick to it. And this is why I like Game Night so much. And I've said this over and over again.
It's a great movie.
Like Game Night has its theme, fucking games. And they play games throughout the movie, no matter what the situation is. They play charades to find out where, like, I don't remember what it is, where the knife is or some shit. So I love that they get together in the eye of a hurricane. That's actually exactly the way this should end.
Yeah.
Except you think it should be Sandra Bullock.
I think you're saying that for this version of this.
I think there's so many things that I would have changed to get to that moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think, like, I think I would have gone with or conversely, I would have built up more Tierney to make that moment work.
Right.
But
totally.
I think that my takeaway from this episode, if I'm being completely honest, is that, and I'm going to compare it again to the Runaway Bride episode that we had, which is the Runaway Bride episode was, we all were kind of laughing at how stupid the movie was. This movie elicited a far more visceral response. It hit some nerves. It's a messy movie. I don't think it works across the board, but it has stuff in it that I think is really interesting. And this conversation has been more interesting. I loved the Runaway Bride episode because it was fun, but I don't think we really got into any sort of it. It's just that movie is just surface. Like it's totally superficial. This movie, falling on its face many times over, is sort of kind of weirdly falling into some interesting subjects along the way. So for that, I commend it.
It's a super interesting comparison. That's why I loved like the question right away, right? Because Runaway Bride, when we did that episode, it's punching up. You got Gear. You got Roberts. You got Gary Marshall. You got $200 million, right? You got like the ninth biggest movie of the year. Like
Runaway. Fucking ton of money.
And they tried nothing. Right, and on top of that, they tried less than nothing. They took like Save the Cat, filled in the beats, filled them in poorly, and didn't hit everything they were supposed to hit. Okay, this movie, I think maybe it looks a little bit like I'm punching down, but what I really feel is like missed opportunity.
Yeah, you're just disappointed.
Missed opportunity. Missed opportunity.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
That's exactly how
although
I feel.
Although Kenny is a little mad.
Well, I'm just like, I You know, this is – I never get mad – like Chill Factor I don't get mad at, even though I also fucking honestly think that was a missed opportunity. But like that's such a great log line.
Yeah, when Kenny taps out and becomes like just sort of like – just shrugs – it just goes to show that like he just doesn't give a fuck. Like you're animated here because you care and you feel as though there was something interesting that could have been.
I feel the way you feel. I feel like you and I feel the exact same way.
Yeah.
Except this is the thing I like the least. The thing I like the least are the missed big swings. It upsets me so much as like
I get it, a film writer,
whatever. But
we should 0 to 99 this though.
We should.
Oof. I'll go first just so that you can follow suit. In 99, I remember I rented this film with one of my best friends in Toronto, Dimitri Stubos. We watched this film and we both really liked it. Have not seen it since 1999. In 99, I would probably give this movie a 65, maybe even as high as a 70. Saw it under the best of circumstances, which was, you know, in my basement watching a movie with a good friend and not giving a shit, and it was fun. Needless to say, the film does not have that rating now for me. I'd probably give this film – I'm not sure I can get over 50%. I can't recommend people watch this movie. I think that that would be unfair. I would say that there are things worth watching. Say, for instance, if you're a cinematographer, I would watch this film. I think that there's some interesting photography in it. I give it a 45.
That's a very high rating. What did you give it after the podcast?
After the podcast, it's gone down.
You gave it a 45. You have your 45 on screen.
Yeah, right.
Oh, got it. Okay.
After the podcast, I'd say I'm probably down to it. I'm down to a 35.
Snap.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm not convinced Clark's going over 50 either.
I am going to go over 50. But
In 99?
No. Okay. Oh, yes. So when I was in 99 or whenever I first saw this movie, which is probably around that time or a little after, probably in a similar circumstance, renting it, watching it at home or whatever. I love Sandy B. I love Ben Hoofleck. I love all the – and I remember really being really impressed with like the visuals, even as a young person. So sure. I would have probably given it like an 80 because you know I love Sandra Bullock. Sure. I love Ben Affleck. I'm 13 years old, like you know,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Now I would say that actually my rating hasn't changed even after talking about this because I agree with all the points that you guys made and make and recognize them. I would give it a 60 before and after. The reason why is because I think that if you like Ben Affleck and you like Sandra Bullock. It's really cool to me to see where this movie falls within their careers, especially if you're a Sandra Bullock person,
sure.
Which I am. So I would say if you are not a Ben Affleck person, if you are not a Sandra Bullock person, you should probably go with your rate, like the boys' ratings. You know what I mean? Because but
you don't know my rating.
I have
a suspicion.
It's a hypothesis, but if you're interested in those types of things, I think it's worth a watch and then being done with it.
I agree with that.
I want to.
It is an interesting It is an interesting exercise in the Sandra Bullock, Ben Affleck of it all.
I want to weirdly because I have like the exact opposite rating. I want to co-sign everything Clark just said. I one of the things that I love about this podcast is watching movies I would otherwise not watch and specifically, you know, seeing where these movies fall within certain people's filmographies, be they directors, actors, whatever. I'm happy that I watched this movie. I knew it would lead to an interesting conversation and it did. That being said,
you didn't see it in 99.
I've never seen this movie before.
Oh, interesting.
I got to tell you what I actually gave it because I feel bad.
I'm sure it's like a
fun. I didn't make this. I didn't produce this
movie. I gave it an 18 after watching it. Mm-hmm. I called it a truly terrible movie with a really weird ending.
Who did you call that to?
I wrote it down.
Okay.
Yeah, I read a little blurb. I read a little blurb after. You can't get much worse than an 18.
You can. There are 17 ways you could get worse.
It's true.
That's true, but we've given so – I've given 18's kind of – the opposite of rarefied air. It's kind of toxic air. Like, we haven't really gone that low very often, right? I mean, I did get Chill Factor of 3.
And Story of Us, I think, was the 15. Other one.
15.
Yeah.
And, but I think we – Detroit Rock City was like a 20. This I actually think is better than Detroit Rock City.
It's decidedly I better than that, Detroit Rock City.
I think this movie I'm
fucking hated Detroit Rock City.
I honestly think this movie weirdly goes up a little bit because of the quality of the conversation it brought. I'm going to give it a 22. Going up from an 18 to a 22 for a movie I truly despised is quite an accomplishment. So,
I mean, to be fair, I mean, I was at a 35. You know what I mean?
We're in the same ballpark.
We're in the same ballpark. I'm giving it more credit than you are, but I mean, I think that this movie is just it brought a very interesting conversation to the floor. I enjoyed talking about it. I think that we got to talk a little bit about. We'll talk some more Ben Affleck when we do Dogma. So we got a little bit of that to, you know, we can do some more specifically some Kevin Smith.
What's
Ben
so
Affleck,
interesting about Dogma? Because
we didn't talk Chasing Amy, obviously, here.
Yeah, what's so interesting about Dogma and Affleck is like he's with Damon in that.
He is,
and he plays a pretty high, very high status character, and he's very confident. Yeah. Like he had it. It's whatever.
It doesn't matter. Anyway. So we'll talk about that
weird movie. Some of us liked it. Some of us didn't. Next week,
we're doing another Force of Nature.
Wow. Yeah, I guess.
We are doing one of
the second biggest movie of 1999.
In the box office.
Yeah, and also, I mean, this movie did, you know.
What's the biggest movie? Picture. What's the biggest movie in 1999?
Well, it's Star Wars. Box office.
Oh, what would you say the biggest movie of 1999 is?
I mean,
if you, it's a stupid question. It's a stupid question.
Yeah.
With absolutely no criteria spelled out for you. But what would you say is kind of like the biggest movie? I think I know what my answer is.
I think, I mean, I'm going to say The Matrix.
It's The Matrix.
Yeah.
It's the answer. All right, great. I think this is probably number two.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. I think that. Because I was looking at the box office, obviously, again, and just being like...
We're doing Sixth Sense next week.
Yeah, sorry, we're doing Sixth
Sense. For Halloween.
For Hallow's Eve.
Because it's a spooky movie.
but I think that it's crazy to think that it actually beat Toy Story 2, like at the box office. That's actually a kind of insane thing.
That is insane.
You know what I mean? Like to think about...
What this movie accomplished commercially and culturally is insane.
It's bonkers.
When you watch the movie, and I can't wait to do it. It's a very it's going to be a great podcast. It's an incredibly memorable movie. It's had an incredible cultural resonance over the last 20 years. It really never went away.
Yeah.
One of those movies, and God, there's so much to say about
it. Yeah, I mean it's kind of crazy how big a movie it was.
Crazy.
Because I even think at the time that I saw it, and we'll obviously get into this in the episode, but it was a cultural moment in a way that is just really surprising for a ghost story. Do you know what I mean? Like, anyway.
Let's save this for the podcast. Yeah. Come back. It's obviously Sixth Sense. It's one of the – it's truly one of the reasons
it's
we're doing
Kenny
this.
Just Kenny and I were going old school with this
yes,
movie. Yes. No guest.
Spoiler, we disagree on this movie.
Marginally. Not as much as like this isn't going to be a.
Do we disagree? Have we dis? I think this is the movie we disagree on most because we
probably in
share
terms of your
brain.
Esteem for this film in '99 and mine. Yeah, but it's like this isn't going to be like a you know this isn't a this cage match.
It's not going to be like Forces of Nature.
it is not going to be. I mean,
can't wait to talk.
We're
going to
talk about that
super
next
interesting
week.
Movie.
Clark, you are on Twitter. What is your Twitter handle?
On the social medias, I'm at Clark Wolf. Clark with an E. Wolf with an E.
I am at PM Iskov on Twitter. Our podcast is Podcast Like 1999. Kenny is at Nybart.
I sure am.
Please rate, review, subscribe,
Clark,
tell your
thanks
friends.
So much.
Please come back on for
please have
for
me.
A movie. How about for a movie that we all really love? How about
ooh,
that?
Great.
So it's not contentious.
I don't know.
I'm up for whatever.
This is what the podcast is.
No, I wasn't dogging it. I was just saying it'd be nice to see the yin to the yang of this.
All right,
to this well, episode. That's all I was saying.
You got it.
I'm in. Thank just you, tell
Clark.
Me when.
Thank you so much, Clark.
All right. Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it. You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it. Just podcast.
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.